So we're holding on Peshkat Samar Aleph, about just a bit above the middle of the Yom, a few lines past the Mishnah line in the dummy. Okay, we said in the Mishnah that kalim that are used for liquids are only Mekadosh liquids, not solids. Kalim that are used for solids in the Beis Mikdash are only Mekadosh solids. We mentioned at the beginning of the Gemara that these Rokes, which are used for both, are Mekadosh both. So, Amar Shmuel, and the Mishnah also said that if a keli got a hole in it, the Mishnah had said that if the keli can still be used for its original purpose, even with the hole, then it's Mekadosh, and if not, then no. So, Amar Shmuel, clay sharets in Mekadosh el shleim. First of all, clay sharets are Mekadosh things that you put into them, like a mincha or blood or what have you, only when they're whole, because as we said in the Mishnah, if they have a hole in them, hello? If they break, if they have a hole in them, and they're not usable with the hole, then they're not Mekadosh, almost more, let's mix a few lines into the Gemara. So, clay shardis and Mekadosh only shlein, and only when they're whole. In Mekadosh and Malay, and they're also only Mekadosh when they're full. So Rashi says that means, in other words, it's full in the sense there has to be the complete shear of what you need for the appropriate things. For example, if you're talking about a regular mincha consists of at least an istara and a flour, so it has to be one full istara. If it was a mincha misachim, then you need three esterinim or two or whatever, as opposed to if you didn't have that much. The Raivad has a different take on it. He says it means also when we say in Mekadshin al Malayan, it means keli itself has to be the appropriate size for that thing. You can't take, for example, an istara and a flour and put it into a two istara and keli and expect it to be Mekadosh. And we're holding a few lines back. So in Mekadshin al Malayan.
Yes.
Okay. And in Mekadshin el Mitochon, and a third detail, says Shmuel, also, clay shardas are only Mekadosh from the inside. So not what spills over the out, not what spills over onto the outside. We know. The Ba'amri law, or another version of what Shmuel said, is in the Mekadosh el Shleimen Umalein Umibifnim. The second version of what Shmuel is saying is that they're Mekadosh, again, only if they're whole, not if they're broken, only if they're full, not if you don't have a complete amount in there, or if you have a larger keli, or whatever. And Mibifnim, which Rashi says, Mibifnim means, like we said in our Mishnah, that they have to be El Bakodesh. They're only Mekadosh things when they're actually in the Azara.
When they full means to measure.
We said that's what I'm saying. There's two different explanations. Rashi says it means the measure has to be full. If you're talking about a mincha, for example, which consists of at least an isarin, then it has to be the full isarin. And the Raizat says that it means, in addition, it means the keli itself has to be a one isarin keli, according to the Raizat. Okay. So the second version of what Shmuel is saying is that they're Mekadosh only shleimin, only if they're whole, or Malayim, only if they're full. And on the inside. Now, what does it mean on the inside? Rashi says that means in the Azara, which in that case is the same thing as we use the expression in the Mishnah, El Bakodesh. Tosfos asks on that, because then in that case, why not use the same wording as the Mishnah? Why not use the wording Bakodesh? So therefore, Tosfos gives a different explanation, that what we mean is, let's say, sometimes you can have a keli, for example, where you have the regular receptacle of the keli, but it's also possible to turn the keli over or on its side or whatever and create a new hollow in some other part of the keli. Imagine, you can't have clay shardas, can't be made out of wood. If it was made out of wood, it would be easy to imagine. You take the wood and you carve out on the other side of it, you carve out a new bowl or whatever. But the clay shardas can't be made out of wood, according to the Chachamim and Halacha is like them. But fine, even with metal, though, conceivably you could shape out on a different side of it, you could shape out a receptacle. The point is, Tosfos says that wouldn't work. It would be Mekadosh only according to the second version. Mibifnim means only on the actual main receptacle that the keli was made, not when you carved out a different one on a different side. Right. Okay. Okay, so what's the practical difference between these two versions of what Shmuel is saying, whether they're Mekadosh Mitochan or Mimachim? The answer is, it could be now Birgul Simid. The difference between the two versions would be, what about the heat-up amount that goes above the top surface of the cake? That you have, when it comes to flour or other solids, you can pour it into a keli, and it ends up as a heaping measure. Is that heaped-up amount does it also become Kodesh in the sense that now if it becomes Tomei, you can't be Kodesh, above the rim of the cave, exactly. So according to the first version, no.
One rim
is
not the rim. What is the rim? It's a bowl. It's a bowl,
yeah.
It's made with a...
So the rims are not necessarily exactly equal.
Okay, yeah. I don't think they'd make them that way. They would make them even. But so if it's heaped up above the amount, according to the first... Come on. The point is that... Okay. The point is they're Makadish... They're Makadish only what's in... Okay, according to the first version, they're Makadish only what's inside them. So therefore, what keeps up above the rim of it is not part of the Kiddush, and therefore, if it became Tama, you could be Poda that part or whatever. According to the second version, no, you don't have that limitation. It's just Mibisnim that they have to be inside the Azara, or like Tosafot says, it can't be that you carved out a receptacle on the other side or something. But according to that second version... The bigger the amount that sticks up above would actually not be Niskadish.
It's called
Birusim. That's what it's called is a word that means overflowing, like. So that's what it means. Okay. The Masnisatana in a Brayta that we learn actually it's all four of them. Ein Makadishim Ela Shleimim Umalein Umitoychan Ubifnim. So you're combining the two statements of Shmuel.
Yeah.
In other words, we have two versions of what Shmuel said, but the Braisa summarizes it and says all four of them are necessary conditions. And that means the Birustim will not become Kodesh, because again, they're not inside the Keli, and that Rashi points out, there's a Machlokas on that in Menachos, but based on this, it would mean that's Lalo. I believe that's how the Ramah passed them. Okay. Amrav Ashi Amrav Yitzchanan. Lo Shonu Ela She'en Daiti Lohoisim. Now this that we're saying, that a keli is Makadish only when it's full, only applies if you don't intend to add more to it. So in other words, if you, for example, bring a keli, which does not contain a complete isarin for a mincha, let's say, and you don't intend to put anything else in, then it's not Makadish. But if he intends to add more, so right now he only put in half an isarin, let's say, because that's all he had on hand, but he had intention to add more, rishin kodesh, then each amount, as it's put in, becomes kodesh. Taninami hochi, in fact, we learn like that in a braisa, malein, when we say that klei shodos are makadish only when they're malei, only when they're whole, ein malein ela shleimim, that means that the word malein means complete, means complete. It has to be a complete isaron. It has to be a complete lug or whatever. Amar Rav Yosi, Amosai, but Rav Yosi says, when is that? That's not Makadish otherwise. Bizman she'en daite lahosif, if you don't intend to add anything more, avol daite lahosif, but if you intend to add more, rishin kodesh, then as you add more, it becomes kodesh. There were, by the way, Fabrangans at various times when the Rebbe used to quote this in one or another context. Well, a couple of times there were, that when people were saying L'chaim, the Rebbe would insist they use a full cup. So he started saying L'chaim, 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 only when it's holding its capacity. A couple of other times the Rebbe talked about it's also an idea in Avoida, that if a person is capable of doing a certain amount in Avoida, and they're not living up to their potential, in L'chaim, L'chaim. As we just said, if you're planning lahosif, if you're working up there, then fine. But if you're just figuring, well, I don't need to work to my full potential. I can do a little bit, and that's enough because it's still more than other people are doing.
That potential, which is efficient, is considered
null. No, but in other words, you're not accomplishing what you're supposed to.
You're
living
up on your full potential.
It means, in other words, that you can't say that you're Makadish what you're doing. You need to live up to your potential. Okay.
How do you know what's your potential?
You have to figure it out, so you have to talk with the Mashpia.
Are you working on filling your potential? Or are you just gonna code?
I
don't know what my potential.
Okay, well then a person has to figure it out for themselves, a person needs to be honest with themselves, and a person needs to have a Mashpia to talk it out. Let's go for it. Okay. Then we said ein klei halach makadish before. We said in the Mishnah that kalim that are used for liquids are not makadish solids and vice versa. Amar Rav, he came Rav Asi, so now Rav, or some say Rav Asi, comes and says on that, actually, when we say it's not makadish, doesn't mean fully. Ein makadish in likorin. It's true. A, a keli that's meant for liquid is not mechadish solid, like a flour for a mincha, in the sense you can't be makri with it. You would have to put it into a kli, you would have to put it into a keli for dry, that's meant for dry things to be mechadish it in order to bring it on the bed. Av mechadish in mitpasol. But it is kaddish to the extent that now it becomes possible that if afterwards taken out of the azara or it becomes tame,
so
then it becomes possible. So it's not right. In other words, exactly. So
it's possible, but it's not fully.
Right. So in other words, it's able to become possible. It's not. It's able to become possible if it's taken out of the azara or tame touches it or what happens. And if it does, then the djinn is you can't be poida because you can only be poida animals. You can't be poida your other things that have kedushas like goof. The only ones you can be poida are animals. You can't be poida birds. You can't be poida non-living things like menachos or whatever. The Gemara discusses it. What's what?
Halach.
Enkei halach means kalim polit. Okay. Yes.
Where?
Yeah. By the way, the Rambam brings this din, but in a different context. The Rambam brings this din in connection with what we were saying a minute ago. If you have a keli that you brought in only part of an insurin, for example, so it wasn't completely full, the Rambam learns that this thing in Mekadshim Likarev or Mekadshim Lipostol is referring to that. And the Noisa Kalim on Rambam, I believe, in particular the Kesef Mishnah, say apparently the Rambam did not have in his Girsa the words that we have here between the two dots, Ein Klei Alach Makadish, for the Chola. So therefore, the Rambam's Girsa of the Gemara was that that Rav or Ravati statement is referring back to the previous thing about the Zman Shadaita Lahosif and Zman Shadaita Lahosif rather than Torah Mishnah. Okay. The Gemara says, Isha Demasni Lo'ahor. Then you have other Amirayim who learned that this statement about being Makadish as far as Likrav, that it can't be offered on Mizeach, but that it becomes possible. Others refer it to the following state. So Shishim Kubekos actually brings yet another Girsa that it's referring to what the Mishnah had said, that Klei Sharis are Makadish only in the Kodesh, but not only when they're in the Azara, but not when they're outside. But now we have now the Gemara inside in the Gemara we have yet another version of what the statement of Mekadshin Likarev versus Mekadshin Likotzel refers to. Namely, we learn in a Braisa, Ein Mevin Menachos and Nesachim. You're not allowed to bring Menachos of flour and oil or Nesachim, the flour, wine, and oil that accompany a korban, or Minchas Behema, or the Mincha that goes along as part of the Nesachim with an animal, the flour. Bikurim that are brought from the Shiva Saminim. None of those you're allowed to bring Minha Meduma. You're not allowed to bring any of those from Meduma. Now, the usual meaning of Meduma is when you have Truma mixed up with Chulin in an amount where there's too little Chulin to be Mevatel the Truma. We had that previously in the eighth Perek Kol Hazvachim when we dealt with the whole issue of Taruvus. We talked about it. So Rashi learns that that's what we're dealing with over here. We're talking about, in other words, you have truma got mixed up with chulin. You're not allowed to use from that mixture to bring for these korbanos. Rashi says it's mutter to koyanim. Koyanim would be allowed to eat it. The answer is that Rashi says no. When we say that korbanos have to be kosher, we learn from Pesach and Chesed, Mashke Yisrael, it means something that has to be able to be eaten by all Jews, koyanim, levim, and Yisraelim, not just koyanim. So therefore, that's why Rashi says that Meduma would be off-limits over here. Tosfos says that not necessarily. Tosfos says that it could be that if it's allowed for Koyanim, then it is allowed for Korbanos. So Tosfos learns that rather Meduma over here has a different meaning than it usually does. Instead of meaning where Truma was mixed in, it means that Orlo, Kalaya, Kerim were mixed in. So again, in an amount where maybe on a Daraisa level they would be bottled, but on a Darabonim level they're not. So less than 1 in 200, where 1 in 100 for Orla, 1 in 200 for Pelayakam. It's 1 in 200 for both, actually. So that's according to Tosfos, that's what it means in Madura. The Ein Sarach Loimah may Orla with Pelayakam. Needless to say, you can't bring Menachos and Nesachim and so forth from actual unmixed Orla or Pelayakam, because those, for sure, you have the rule Mimashki Yisrael, that Korbanos have to be something that's edible by Jewish people and Orla and Pelayakam or not.
Orla
is the fruit from a tree that's worth 3 years. Right. Yeah. So Karam is when you planted grape near grain or vegetables. The Inhedi Loikidnish, and if you bring from Orla to Liakarim or from this Meduma, Loikidnish it doesn't become holy. And on that, according to this version, Amarabi, Tamaravasi, like Kodesh Likra, Baba Kodesh Likoso. Again, according to that, according to the second version, what Rav or Ravasi is saying, it means it doesn't become Kodesh as far as that you can offer it on the Mizbeach. It is off limits to the Mizbeach, because it is also to eat, or according to Rashi, also to eat for Yisraelim at least. But it is Kodesh in the sense that now it can become possible, that it says that if it becomes Tomei, or if it goes out of the Azara or whatever, then you can't be part of it. Well, according to Rashi, actual Olo Kalai Chayim, obviously they can't. But Rashi learns that Meduma is talking about over here the usual meaning of Meduma. You have a Sav colon fell into 99, so a Sav Truma rather fell into 99 Sav colon. The din is Midrabanan, the whole thing is Osir to Yisrael, and you have to sell it all to Kohenim, but you have to sell it all to Kohenim. The Truma itself belongs to them, but the rest of it you sell to Kohenim, and they eat all of it. Rashi learns that you wouldn't be allowed to use that mixture for Korbanos. Because even though it's Musa for Kohenim, it's also for Israel. Okay.
Why is it also for you?
Because you don't have enough room of operable trauma, because you have a solid trauma that makes sense.
So, meaning that you add more.
If you had 100 times as much colon, well, you can't add more because it's in the vatsa mitzvah vatsa, exactly. Yeah. But if you had, to begin with, if you had 100 saw of colon and one saw of truma fell in, then you're good. Then you're good. Midaraita is 2-1, as you would. So anyway, so we have a number of different versions what Rav or Ravasi is saying in the Kadshan Mikrav on the Kadshan Mitzvah. Is it referring to the case in our Mishnah where you put solids into a keli meant for liquids or vice versa? Or is it talking about the case where the keli wasn't completely full yet? Or is it talking about the case where the keli was outside the Azara? Or is it which is what the Shidduch Kemesis brought? Or is it the case over here if you brought Menachos, or if you brought them from the Duma or from Orla or from Kaliapen? Okay. We learn in a Brisa. Since we mentioned in the Mishnah, the case where Klei Shoreis got a hole in them, so we said if they're still usable, then they're Mekadosh, and if not, then they're not Mekadosh. So let's talk about cases where Klei Shoreis get damaged. Klei Kodesh Shenikru, Klei Kodesh, meaning Klei Shoreis, that get a hole in them. You can't melt around the hole, like where you use like a soldering iron or something to melt the metal near the hole in order to make it flow and then close up the hole. You can't do that. You also can't melt lead or some other metal into to patch up the hole. Rather the only thing and this
way. Not only if you're in the hole, you can never add something else to a clay shard.
No, that's not the point. The point is not that you can't add something. The point is not that you have a problem adding something to the clay shard. The problem is, as we're going to say soon, it's in a nius v'mokam ashir. The expression the Gemara is going to have soon is there's no poverty in a place of wealth. So this mikdash is a place of wealth. It's the house of Hashem, so to speak. Liya kesef liya zav. Hashem says, you know, all the gold and all the silver in the world is mine. So if you take right, that's also true. The Medrash says that gold, the world didn't even deserve to have gold. It was only created for the sake of this Medrash. So to take a damaged Klei Shoreis and because once Hashem put gold in the world, then it's usable, it's able to be used in other places also. But the primary purpose of it was for the Beit Mikdash. So the point being, in other words, that if you were to take a damaged Klei Shoreis and fix it, that would be showing like you're poor. That would be showing like we can't afford, it doesn't matter. So therefore, the only thing you can do is, the Rambam says, you can melt them down and make a new keli out of the molten metal. But you can't fix the existing
keli. Probably easier to melt them down anyway.
That may be. Nifkamu, and if the keli somehow gets damaged or dented or what have you, in the fact, you know, we don't fix them for the same reason. Because it ain't any of them. What? The clay shards, in principle, they could be made out of any metal. In practice, mostly they were made out of gold and silver. No, mostly... One second. Most of the clay shards... Hold on. Most of the clay shards were made out of gold and silver. If they couldn't afford it, then yes, they could make it out of any metal. You're mentioning, for example, the menorah. The Gemara tells us in Menachos and in a couple of other places that there came a point, we know in the Pasuk it says they're supposed to make it out of gold, but after, for example, it says after the Kash Menorah recaptured the Beit Mikdash and cleaned it out, they couldn't afford, so they used iron spits, and eventually they upgraded to silver, and eventually they upgraded to gold. But that's, yeah.
But
in general, L'chatchila, you're supposed to make that out of gold or silver if you can afford it, yeah.
Can you make both in the same case, both together?
Both gold and silver?
Yes.
You have actually, there's a missionary in Yuma that mentions that Vilni Hamalka, either Vilni or Munbaz, I think it's Munbaz actually, made all the handles of the kalim and the mitzvah out of gold. And actually what the Gemara explains over there is we're talking about things like knives, the shchita or whatever. You can't make the blade of the knife out of gold, it'd be too small. So therefore he just made the handles out of gold. But yeah, fascist, then that means that you could have more than one metal on a free shot like this. Okay. Anyway, so that's the verse then. So you don't fix them because ain't on you from what mashir. It's disrespectful to this mitzvah to fix them because it looks like it's a poor place, like as if we can't afford them. Similarly, sakin shenitzgam, if a knife that's used for shchita gets a gimmer in it, gets a nick in it, and therefore you can't use it for shchita because it would make the animal dirty. Ein mashchizin es gimasa, you don't sharpen it to remove the nick. To remove the scum instead of, yes. Nishmaka in Machzirinaisa, and also if the blade comes loose from the handle, then you don't put it back. You just, again, you put away the knife and Gniza and get a new one. Yeah, that's it. So you have, if you look on the diagrams of this mikdash that are hanging up downstairs, you have those two, you have the heichel, where the heichel is mostly rectangular, but then in front, you have the ulam, and you have two wings on each side. Actually, the way it's diagrammed downstairs, the way it's diagrammed on those diagrams is the way that Ivid and some others are showing hold that there were just rings sticking out in front. According to the Rambam, those rings actually went the full length of the halo. Whatever it is, the point is that those rings were called the Beis HaChalifos, Chalif being another word for a shrippinite, and therefore they would put away there the shrippinites that became possible, like we're saying over here. Yeah. And we never found them. The whole business message was destroyed. What are they supposed to find? There's the fascists when the Romans conquered the business message. They took every metal. They took all the metal they could get their hands on. Lahavdil, you remind me. They found ancient battlefields or whatever where they can't find a scrap of metal on the battlefield, even though, of course, they're going to scavenge it afterwards.
So you're talking about this side branches?
Yes.
In the front
of the hand. Right. Okay. All right, let's go on. Abba Sholem, back in... Yeah, exactly. So, well, according to the Diver, it was like a sea. According to the Rambam, it was actually a trapezoid. It was wider in front and narrowed a little bit towards the back. But whatever, the point is that you have these wings either in front or going alongside it. Okay, let's go on. Abba Sholem, back in Machrefet HaYitamikdash, Abba Shol says, there was a knife in the Beit HaMikdash that they used for Shchita, but it was making the animal chafe because the blade was not hard enough, so therefore it was easily getting nicked or dented or whatever, so therefore the korbanos were becoming possible from it. The Nimnu, although Kohenim were Gnazua, and so the Kohenim voted about it, what to do about it, and they decided to put it in Gniza, to put it away, right? Well, why they had to vote? So there's a few possibilities that Mephoshim talk about. First of all, the previous case, we could be talking about the previous case, Sak and Shenifkam, would be talking about when there's a large nick in it. So then it would be a lack of cover to the Beit Mikdash to go and chart it. Here we're talking about maybe that it was only getting smaller, that it was only getting smaller nicks, so maybe it wouldn't be such a bizarrean to resharpen it. But like this, since it was constantly... What?
It would be trace.
No, but that's obviously. But the point is, in other words, if it was a large nick, you can't resharpen it. But if it's a small nick, if it's a one-time small nick, then you could. But like this, where it kept on getting nicked. It kept on easily getting nicked. And there's other possibilities also. They might have found other ways to harden the blade or whatever. But whatever. In this case, they decided the best thing to do is just to put it in the middle. Turn it up on. We learn in a bright. So since we mentioned the clay shard is getting damaged, let's talk about a similar thing as far as the Bigdei Kahuna. Bigdei Kahuna ain't oisinois a maitin macha. First of all, the Bigdei Kahuna are not made by needlework, meaning sewing pieces of cloth together. Elamase oreg, they're made by weaving. So in other words, they're woven in the round. So shenema master oreg, because the object is in the round. Well, in other words, for example, let's say the sewness, the
lawyer.
Sort of, yeah, like a sweater or something, yeah, like a...
Well,
no, well, in other words, the point is...
They're woven,
but in other words, it's not woven like normally a shirt, for example. You take a look at your shirt, it's made out of different pieces of cloth that are sewn together. You have a seam here, whatever.
So that's... Everything's woven here.
Understood. But I'm talking about what the Gemara is telling us over here is that the actual, for example, the kohenim, what the long shirt that the kohenim wore, it wasn't made out of different pieces stitched together. It was made as one, it was originally woven as one round piece. Now, the sleeves were attached by stitches. The sleeves were not woven together with it. But the central part of it was woven in the round, going round and round like this, rather than weaving it, rather than weaving one.
It was not knitted.
That's the point, right? It was more round. And similarly with the other bezikaron, so they were made maase oreg. They were made woven as one piece, with the exception of the sleeves. And also for maase macha. No, maase macha would mean stitching them together with a needle. So they didn't do that, except for certain pieces of them. The sleeves of the klonis were sewn on, for example, in the case of the ephod of the kohen gadol. Also, you had the shoulder straps were sewn on. But in general, the body of each beged was made as one whole piece. Okay, continues the brasa. Nisgalu, if the big dick kohen become dirty, ein mechavtin lo b'neser v'lo b'ahol, you can't wash them with neser or ahol, which are different kinds of detergent. And neser is sodium carbonate or something, some kind of earth that was used in those days for laundering. Ahol is a kind of plant that has a kind of plant that has aloe or ice plant or whatever that has So you don't do that. So the question is, what do you mean? So what do you mean? You should wash them only with water? If the whole point is enanias mokamashiru, if the whole point is you don't want to act like an then adraba, then if you and if you don't use detergent. Why are you washing them with water? And in that case, it'll be even worse. You wash them with water, they're going to stay even dirtier. At least you use nectar or aloe on them, they get clean. Amar Abaye hafakam. Abaye says, right. But what the Braisa means is as follows. Hubu b'magin, if the begadim became only dirty enough, if the begadim became only dirty enough that all they need is to be washed with water, then that's fine, you can still wash them. Then you can wash them not only with water, you could even use detergent when you're washing them. But hugu, the nesev ahal, but if they got so dirty that you need to do a serious scrubbing of them with nesev and ahal, then ask the mime in the chabs. And then we say that don't even use water on them, then just put them away or the Rambam says actually what you do based on other Gemaras, what you do with the used clothes of the Kohenim is they would make ricks either right. For the menorah or for the big candelabras that they use during Simchas Beis HaSheva, they would make those out of those. But then don't, once they're so dirty that they would need nesser or ahol, then already we say ein anias from wakam ashirus and go ahead and just put them in gniza or do whatever with them, use them for ricks or whatever.
Question. Yeah. Ein anias from wakam ashirus goes even before that they became so dirty, you replace them once they became dirty.
Well, that's the point. In other words, we're saying that if they only became a little bit dirty and you can just clean them with water, then fine. You can go ahead and clean them with water, and then at that point you could even use nectar and ahol if you feel like it. But if they got so dirty that they need nectar and ahol, then already it's too late to do anything. Then you can't wash them. Different kinds of chemicals that they used in those days.
But it's not the same as in Baba Basra, where they
And then Baba Basra, we had a thing in the second paragraph over there where it talks about where they use dog waste, where they use dog excrement to clean clothes. No, we're not talking about that. We have a good idea. The yesh and the chab sinos and kol ikar. Others say that no, when the begadim of the kohenim become dirty, you don't wash them at all, not even with water. She'en anias b'makom ashirus, because again you have this rule that we don't act like in a cool way in a place of ashirus. Just go and make new ones rather than washing the old ones. So that's what it is. Mind you, I mean, we're going to learn later on in the 11th Perek that there are some rare cases where you do have to wash the Bidei Kohanah, namely if blood of a chassah splashed on them, because then the Torah tells us you have to wash them. But that's an exception. That's an exception. I have no idea. But
because
Makom Ashirus refers to the Bet Mikdash. Actually, it's interesting. The Tshuva Me'ava, a Talmud of the Noda of Yehuda, who afterwards was Rav in Prague, succeeding the Noda Bihoda. He writes in one of his chuvas that he one time asked the Noda Bihoda. He collected all the places in chat where it says Ein Ani Yis Mokam Ashir. He collected, on the other hand, all the places where it says Atoda Chota Amon and Tzur Yisrael. And he asked his Rebbe, the Noda Bihoda. So what is it? How do you balance these? How do we balance these two things out? And the Noda Bihoda answered him basically that you go according to what's needed. In this case, for example, you need the kalim, you have to have a whole kalim. You can't use damaged kalim. You can't use dirty bigdikulana. Then we say, and I mean, it's makmashir. When you're talking about something that doesn't directly, that's not strictly necessary for the kalim themselves. For example, one of the examples that the Shulchan Aruch brought is, for example, that when it comes to the gerolas that they used on Yom Kippur, where it says that originally they were made out of wood, and the box that they were put in was made out of wood. Later on, one of the Kohanim Gadolim made them out of gold instead, but why were they out of wood? Because they're not a free shortest anyway, so they don't have to be made out of metal. And Hatzorah Chol Salomon and Shayyisrael. So fine. So there's no to be heard that says that's the point. Because it's not a cliche of it, there's no necessity to make them out of metal. So then go ahead and then push for you to shoot out. Okay. So that's
it works, but if right. You say it's a question of Malcolm.
Right, but in other words, the point is, it's not so much a question of the Beit Hamikdash, but it's not. It's a question of the things that are necessary for the avodah of the Beit Hamikdash, the kalim and the basic kohuna and whatnot, versus other side things like these gerolas, which even though they're used in the Beit Hamikdash, they're not a cliche per se.
So there's not any.
Right. So that's the Noda Bihoda thing is another consideration as well. Okay, I mean, the Aruch HaShulchan and Aruch HaShulchan HaOsid, he says that, you know, we're saying you shouldn't be washing them, but if you wash them, whether with water or whether with nether or ahal or whatever, okay, you know, it doesn't make them possible. It doesn't make them possible. You can still go ahead and continue to wear. Okay. Now, since we're talking about the Big Day Kahuna, let's talk about the details of how one of the Big Day Kahuna was made. Specifically the Mitzvah. The Agadah is going to be soon. Wait. Yeah. Okay. Me'il kolish of chela poya. The me'il of the Kohen Gadol. I'm not sure why out of all the big kahuna it's focusing specifically on the me'il. Later on, we're going to talk about all eight big kahuna, but why it's mentioning specifically how the me'il was made, I don't know. Okay, me'il. Well, it's nice. One of the eight garments of the Kohen Gadol. Me'il kolish of chela poya. The me'il was made completely out of chela. Shenemah bayafet me'ilay for klil chela. Shulav Kesav. Now, how did they make? Now, the pasuk says in Parshas Truma, and again in Parshas Kode when they made it, that they you had hanging that on the hems of it, hanging up on the hems of it, you had rimonim and you had ta'amonim. The rimonim are pomegranates and ta'amonim are bevel. So, how was that made? Maybe tchelas va'agomon tchelas shoni shidurin. They would bring tchelas, which is blue wool, va'agomon and purple wool or crimson or whatever, but tchelas shoni and red wool. And at Shizurin, twisted together, twined together to make threads. But oisa oisam kmin rimonim shalai pitchu pihen, and they would weave them into a shape, into a round ball-like shape, shaped like a pomegranate whose mouth hasn't opened up yet. So Rashi describes that if you leave a pomegranate to over-ripen on a tree, then it will split open. So here we're talking about they would be shaped more like the pomegranates that we buy in the store, where they haven't split open like that yet. So round. There's that little crown-like thing on top. It means that the whole thing burst. That's what Rashi says. The whole thing burst open. So it hasn't reached that point yet. It's still basically round, but with that crown on top. Yeah.
So there was because there's more fluid that comes in.
Oh yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay, so they would shape them like these rimonim that haven't yet opened up. Another way of describing what they look like is they made them look like the buttons or the round like pom poms that are on top of the helmets that kids wear. So Rashi describes that when kids are play fighting, they make themselves helmets out of soft branches or rubber leaves or whatever, and then they put on top of it like a little pom pom, like a little round shaped thing. So the ones on the bottom of the me'il were shaped somewhat like that. Or maybe so that's the rimonim. Or maybe shivum shnayim zagin. Then you bring 36 bells made out of gold. Shebehen shivum shnayim inbalin, which each bell has a clapper in it. There's 72 bells and 72 clappers. The Tola Behen, and you hang the bells among the pomegranates. Rashi learns on the pasuk that what it be, and also over here that what it means is you had they were alternating pomegranate bell all along one side and all along the other side of the meal. The Ramban on the Sukkim over there says that no, what it actually means is each bell was inside the pomegranate. The pomegranates, he says, were woven hollow, and each one, before they finished weaving it, before they'd finished closing it up, they'd put the bell inside it. Okay, so anyway, so that's according to the Ramban, the pomegranates are inside the bells. According to Rashi, they're alternating, pomegranate bell, right?
How big were they?
Doesn't say. So they'd hang them like that. Shloshim l'shisha b'tzadzeh, shloshim l'shisha b'tzadzeh. There were 36 pomegranates and 36 bells on one side of the meal and 36 on the other. Lamed vav, yeah. When we say, by the way, mitzadzeh, so Rashi says over here it means melachon of a malach, because Rashi learned that the meal was shaped basically like a long calloused cup. It had a hole for the neck. And it hung down one half of it in front of the Kohen Gadol and one half in back. Some of the other Rishonim, including apparently the Rambam, learned that it actually opened down the front. So in that case, they may understand that it means that it was side to side, like it's talking about left side and right side. Whatever it is, anyway, you had 36 on each side.
They made it specifically for the
Kohen Gadol. For the Kohen Gadol, yeah. Rav Doita Omer Mishum Rav Yehuda. Says in the name of Rav Yehuda that no, it wasn't quite that many. Shloshim v'shisha. Are you all together? There were 36. 18 on one side, 18 on the other side. The half as many as the Tanakh said. Amr of Enemi Bar Sosin, Kamachloikas Kan, Kachmachloikas Bemaris Negoyim. You should know the same machloikas that we have over here, whether there were 72 altogether or whether there were 36 altogether, is the same machloikas that we find in connection with Negoyim when it comes to different shades and different colors and different types of Sarah. The Tanan named the Gilun and Mishnah and Negoim, Maris Negoim, Reb Doisav and Hokinath and Lamed Vav. Reb Doisav and Hokinath says that there were 36 types of Torah, Akavi ben Malal and Meshiv Moshnaim. Akavi ben Malal says there are 72. Now what you actually have in the Pasuk, you only have those four shades of white.
Right.
In the Pasuk, you only have those four shades of white. But first of all, you also have, in the Pesukim, you also have over there that you have Lovan Adamdam, you have white, streaked with red, and so that gives you more types as well, because each of the four types of white can also have a similar red streak one. But besides that, also that how we get to 36 or the 72 is also by considering you have also the saras of regular skin, the saras of the head and beard and nephtek. You have the saras on clothes, saras on houses. So once you get into all those details, then you get, depending on how you count it, 36 or 72. Tosfos points out it's not just this that we're saying that there's the same machlokas. It's not just that it happens to be the same numbers. There's actually a deeper connection. We're going to say soon in the Gemara that the me'il was machaper for lashon hara. Therefore, Saras also comes to Lashon Hara. Therefore, there's a connection over there. Just like the Me'il has 36 or 72 bells and pomegranates, as the case may be, so also there are 36 or 72 types of Negoyim, which also come to Lashon Hara. Right?
That's
we're going to see. Wait. Okay, you're asking if it's Mechapa. You're asking if the Me'il is Mechapa, how does the person get Saras? Hold your horses. Let's get this. Now comes the Agam. Because it's fair enough. The Omer of Enemy Bar Sultan. Lama Nismacha Parshas Korbanus LaParshas Bigde Kahuna. Why is the Parsha of Korbanus next to the Parsha of Bigde Kahuna?
So Rashi
says... No, I don't think so. I don't remember it being. Maybe it is. I don't know. Anyway, Rashi says that we're talking about over here in Parsha. So you have in Sav, in Parshas Vayikra and Sav, it talks about the Korbanos. It finishes off Zos Teras, La'Ola, La'Mincha, La'Chatas, etc. And then the next thing is Hashem tells Moshe Kachas Aaron and his sons and the Begadim. So there's a juxtaposition between the Korbanos and the Begadim. There's also another place where they're juxtaposed. Maybe we don't mean that one. Maybe what we mean is in Parshas Kitzava, after it finishes describing the Big Zikorna, the next thing it says is that Hashem tells Moshe, gather Aaron and his sons and start the Miluim. So there, and it mentions the Korbanos of the Miluim. So there also you have the Godim and then the Miluim. So why are they next to each other? Loy malach, to tell you, ma karbonas mechaper and afrik zikohunim mechaper. Just like karbonas are mechaper, so also the big zikohunim are mechaper for various aveis.
Not the same
aveis? That's what we're going to see. Let's go through them one by one. Ksonis mechaperas al shechiz dam. The ksonis is mechaper for people, for spilling blood. For murder. Because we find by when Yosef was sold, it says they took his ksonis, they took his ksonis pasim, his fancy garment that Yaakov had given him, and they dipped the ksonis in blood, which it actually says, besides the simple meaning that they dipped it in blood to make it look like Yosef had been killed, it also was meant as a remez la'asid lava for future generations, that vayitbalu, that the vayitbalu meaning tovaling, like being machaper, like cleaning up. How is the ksonis is machaper, vayitbalu, as a kutonis, badam, the ksonis provides a svila, provides a kapara for dam to spill in blood.
The caused by
is it? No. No. You have actually the Gemara in. No, the Gemara. The Gemara in Erfin. This Gemara, you also have an Erfin. And the Gemara mentions over there a number of different things for which put out from.
Is it
a site? I don't think so. Yeah. But anyway, in Erfin it lists. In Erfin it lists seven things. I don't know when we get to Erfin. We'll see in by session. Anyway. So the furnace and the chaper for shvichas damim. Now, I mean, you have okay. So Tosfos brings up over here the general question that in that case, if it's machaper for shvichas damim, then what are we? With the Gemara itself is going to point out later that you need the egla arufa for that, and you have that whole point. The egla arufa is brought is when you find a person killed out in the fields outside of the city, and you don't know who killed him. Yeah.
So, it's for kapara, which shouldn't happen.
Yeah, well, no, it's for kapara. Kapalam for Yisrael. So, okay, Tosfos discusses it. So Tosfos starts by discussing a few possibilities. That when we say that the ksonis is mechaper for shvichas damim, we mean it's mechaper for the Jewish people collectively. So the Gemara is going to later on ask why we need the egla arufa also, which is also a collective kapara. But the point is, it's not mechaper for the individual who did shvichas damim. As the Gemara is going to say too, and if we know who he is, we have to execute him. But
why should someone be responsible for that? Someone else.
Oh, Yisrael, I reckon that was there, first of all. But second, especially when it's actually, you see that the whole city has to bring an egla arufa. You see the skenim have to declare over there, Yadenu l'shof kos adam azeh. We didn't know that this person was in town and let him go without food and without an escort and whatever, yeah. But, so ordinarily you have Ko Yisrael, I reckon that was there, and everybody would be held responsible. So the furnace helps for kapara for that. So that's one answer. There's a lot of other answers, including Marshal says it can be a difference between shogig, the shogig and the mazid. When we say over here it's machaper, would mean for when it happens to shogig, when we the fact that a person needs to be punished for it, or it means to the egla arufa or whatever, would be when it's mazid. There's other answers also, including that maybe what we mean is over here it's not machaper on actual real shvichas damim when one person killed another, but rather the kind of thing like the Gemara says that if a person embarrasses somebody else in public, it's like shvichas damim. So we don't mean the actual shvichas damim. We mean something in that range. Next one, Nechnasayim Mechaperet Avgili Arayis.
So
according to that last explanation, not necessarily actual Shvichas Damim. Okay, Tosfos apparently doesn't say that, because Tosfos mentions over here that on the face of it, yeah. Okay, fine. Nechnasayim Mechaperet Avgili Arayis, the next one of the Begadim, is Nechnasayim, the pants that the Kohenim wore, the breeches, whatever you want to call them. They're Mechaperet Avgili Arayis. Because the Pasuk describes, make for them michnasayim to cover the flesh of the erva. Meaning, in other words, again, Rashi says, it doesn't just mean the simple meaning that it covered that part of their body. It also means it should cover up. It should be mechaper for, because the literal meaning of kapara is to wipe away the averis of the sar erva, averis of arav. Oh, as far as
the men.
Well, because only men served in the mishmash. But the point is, it was machaper for the Jewish people collectively, men and women. You didn't have women serving in the mishmash and wearing machaper. Yeah. As far as the ksonis, by the way, also Marshall points out another reason why the ksonis should be machaper for shvichas damim is because the ksonis is like an undershirt. The person wears it directly on their skin. So if a person gets killed, Rahman al-Islam, what absorbs most of their blood? The ksonis. Therefore, the ksonis of the kohenim is appropriate to be machaper for that. Mm-hmm.
This is where it sits on your skin directly?
No, usually you wear sits over an undershirt. But I'm talking about.
Hair. Yeah. No, it's not on your
skin. It's not really respectful to wear the sits directly on your body because then you're using it to soak up your sweat. No. Okay, onward. Mitznefes mechaperes argasi aruach. Next, the mitznefes, the turban that the kohen god wore, and the similar mikvah that the regular kohen wore, that is mechaper for gasei haruach. That's mechaper for bale gaiva. Minayin, where do we know that from? Omer mechanina, because it's logical. Yaba java should be goiva veichaper on goiva. Something that's worn on the highest point of his body, on his head, should be mechaper for an abeira that involves being too high up, the person being too proud of himself. Marsha again points out another reason behind it. We know that Gaiva, Gassus Ruach, is associated, the Gemara tells us in Soita and other places, is associated with a lack of Yirat Shemayim. A person doesn't feel that Hashem is higher than him, therefore he feels Gaivadik. The Mitznefes is the turban. It covers the person's head. And we know from the famous story of Rav Nachman by Yitzchak that cover your head in order that you should have Yirat Shemayim. That's the basis of why we wear a yarmulke, is to have Yirat Shemayim. Therefore, that's the connection between the
covering one's head.
Because covering one's head reminds them that Hashem is above them. Therefore, it brings a person to Yirat Shemayim. And you have the famous story in Shabbos about Rav Nachman Yitzchak, whose mother was told by stargazers that he can grow up to be a ganav, so she made him always make sure to cover his hair, that's always cover his head, that way he'll have Yirat Shemayim. And sure enough, he grew up to be Rav Nachman Yitzchak. So yeah, that's Marshal says that's the connection of it here. It's not just that it's worn on the highest point of the body, like the Gemara is saying, it's also the fact that Kohen is covering his head, that helps the mechaper for other people that they should also realize that Hashem is above them.
It's not the sense of shino, it's above that.
Well, yeah. Okay. Next. Avnet mechaper al hira alev. The avnet, the belt of the kohenim wore, is mechaper for hira alev, for people having warm thoughts with their heart. The logic is hecha beise, because the avnet is worn over the heart. It's wound back and forth over and over around the kohen's midsection near the heart, as we learned back in the second paragraph, it's supposed to be about where the elbows touch the body. So therefore, yeah. Choshen mechaper aladinim. Next, the choshen that the kohen god of war is mechaper for mistakes in judgment, where they judge wrongly or whatever. It's the choshen mishpat, as the pasuk described, that's called the choshen mishpat, the choshen of judgment. So therefore, it has a connection with averus involving judgment. Ephod mechaper al avodas zarah. The ephod, the long apron-like thing that the kohen god wore, is mechaper for avodas zarah. Shenema ein ephod is tzrachim. So they have a pasuk that says there's no ephod and tzrachim. Which means, as a simple meaning, it means, in other words, that there's going to come a point when the Jewish people are not worshipping Avodah Zarah and they don't have fake ephod that they used to use for foretelling the future or whatever, and tzrachim. But the way it's phrased in the pasuk, we can also darshan it as meaning, when there's no ephod, then there's the Avodah of tzrachim. Then the Avodah of tzrachim, the Avodah of Avodah Zarah, becomes a serious thing and has to be dealt with. Whereas when there's an ephod, then it's mechaper for that. Me'il mechaper al lashon hara. The me'il is mechaper for speaking lashon hara. Minayin, where do we get that from? Amar Rav Chanina, yava yava shabakil v'yichaper al kol hara. Because the me'il, which makes the noise with the bells tinkling as they're clanging as the kohen walks around, is mechaper for the bad noise, the bad speech of lashon hara. Yeah, that's true. But the sefer Torah is not one of the big zikrona. We're talking about the big zikrona over here. Incidentally, the Kli Yoker on the pasuk.
Is this the pasuk?
No, it's not remind. It's just the opposite. Mechaper for lashon hara. Mechaper for lashon hara. No, just the opposite. It means that you're, so to speak, like drowning out the lashon hara with that. The Kli Yoker on the pasuk has an interesting idea. Also, he says that's why the meal was made completely out of tchelos. Tchelos is, among other things, the color of the sea. So therefore, it's meant to remind a person, just like the sea knows to respect the boundaries Hashem made for it, it doesn't overflood the world. Well, you know, once in a while, but generally it doesn't. The same way, a person needs to realize that Hashem gave you limits and controls on what's on boundaries, on what to speak and what not to speak, and therefore, yeah.
You can't speak when you're underwater.
Well, no. Next, the sit that the Kohen God wore on his forehead is mechaper for azus ponim, for brazenness, for chutzpah. Minayin, where do we get the tzitz here, because by the tzitz it says v'hoya al meitzach Aaron, the tzitz is described as that's on Aaron's forehead. We're regarding the bad midah of brazenness, of chutzpah. The Navi describes that to the Jewish people, he says, you have the forehead of a zoyna, like you're very brazen, like a zoyna is brazen. So we see that there's a connection between brazenness and meitzach, and the forehead. So therefore the tzitz is machaper for that. The Alshech, by the way, points out, why, if, I mean, you have, there's many different averus and many different midas roads or whatever, why after these eight? He says because these eight are taka the ones that the Jewish people ended up being nichshalin throughout during the later times of the first Bais HaMikdash, and the Nevi'im kept on upgrading them for all these eight. You have in here the big three, you have the Zara, Gilad, Ayas, and Shkrifel Damim, and you have other ones that the Nevi'im are telling them all for all the time, Gaiva and Hiru Alev and so forth. So like this, Hashem had in mind to begin with, like this, if the Jewish people end up doing these eight averus, as in the end they did, they could get destroyed altogether, chas v'shalom. Like this, the Big Zikahuna helped to be mechaper to a certain extent, so that at least, okay, the Beit Mikdash will be destroyed, the Jewish people will be sent into Golos, but at least the Jewish people will survive and continue to exist. That's what the Big Zikahuna accomplished. That's right. That's true, but that's the point. So the Alshech HaKadosh says that that's why Hashem gave the eight big zikonis to be mechaper for these eight things in order to head off the problem, refuah kodem l'makah.
When we're in Galus,
we
thought the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, we don't have.
That's true, but we have still the fact that they existed, yes, and the fact that we're learning about them. Okay, so I'm going to ask Amy, so is that so? You're telling me that each of these big zikahuna are mechaper for one of these eight others? There are two averus for which we don't find there's any kapara to be mechaper, so any korban to be mechaper for, almost being like kapara m'makamacha, but we find that Hashem gave a different kind of kapara from them. And he doesn't mention the big zikorna, but rather something else. Elohim shvichos damim v'loshen hara, namely murder and loshen hara. You don't find there's no korban that a person brings after killing somebody, but show you the did. There's no korban that a person brings for saying lashon hara.
Why does the Gemara start with shvodam and then lashon hara? If the lashon hara is worse.
Okay, I don't know, but you'd have to list them in some order, and if it listed them in the opposite order, then you'd have to list it in that order. I don't know. Shvichos damim me'egla arufa. We see, therefore, the shvichos damim, the kapara for it is the egla arufa, that the city brings. Veloshen Hara, Mikturnus. And what's the Kapmara of Veloshen Hara? Is Mikturnus, as we have the story over there with the Tonir of Chananya. Minayim Mikturnus Shemachaperus. How do we know that Mikturnus is Mechaper? Shenem of Ayitin is Mikturnus by Chaper Alaam. Because it says in the story over there after Kurdak's revolt, after the people come and start speaking Veloshen Hara about Moshe and Aaron, Asim Amitim Asim Hashem, you cause that Jews have died. So a plague breaks out, and Aaron takes a pan full of Tzoras and then makes kapara for the people. The Tonid Vei Rabbi Shmuel, so we see that Tzoras is a kapara for Lashon Hara. The Tonid Vei Rabbi Shmuel, and in the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a brisa, Al Mak Tzoras Mechaperas Al Lashon Hara. What specifically is Tzoras Mechaper for Lashon Hara? Because the logic is, Yabba Shabachashai, because it's appropriate that something which is brought in privacy, in secrecy, the Yichaper al Maisa Chashai should be Mechaper for something else that's done in secrecy. Namely, what is it? Rashi explains, when the Kohen Gadol was Bechal, when Keturis was brought every day in the Heichol, everybody had to stay out of the Heichol, and also they had to stay out of the area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. That's the secrecy we're talking about. And when he was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, everybody had to stay out of the Heichol. So in that sense, the Kohen is in there all by himself, so therefore, so it's a bashai, it's like something done in secrecy, similar to Lashon Hara. In Tosfos Yishonim, in Yuma, it brings a couple of other reasons also why, what we say, Dover Shabbat Hashai, so it asks there, what about sprinkling with blood, what about... Fine, well, it involves at least two people, right, fine, but it's still done in privacy, people don't usually go and scream Lashon Hara out in public. Okay, maybe nowadays they do, because people haven't, yeah. But in general, Lashon Hara is usually... Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Okay. So then, Tosfos Yishonim and Yuma mentions an interesting point. What about the sprinkling of the blood of the Korbanos and the Kodesh HaKadoshim? That's also Bahashai. Nobody else is allowed to be doing in the Heichal at that point. So he says, yes, but during the sprinkling, it wasn't Bahashai. The Kohen Gadol had to count. Achas, 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 etc. As opposed to here, the Kodesh is being done in silence. Yeah. Okay. So the question, therefore, is, cash a lashon hara a lashon hara, cash a shvichos damim a shvichos damim. So you have a contradiction that before we were saying in Rav Einani Bar Sosin's bright, Rav Einani Bar Sosin was telling us that that was for shvichos damim ksonus is mechaper, and Rav Yeshua ben Levi is telling us that no, you need the agla rufa for it. And Rav Einani Bar Sosin was telling us in the ill of mechaper for lashon hara, and Rav Yeshua ben Levi is telling us you need ksonus for that. You have a contradiction between those two. So the answer is shvichos damim, shvichos damim like kasha. There's no contradiction between the two cases. And there's no cases between the two cases of shvichos damim. Hod yediyah man kasle, hod lo yediyah man kasle. One case is talking about where we know who killed him. So then the ksonus is machasa for the sigur, so they shouldn't be punished. And the other case, we need the eglar roper. You don't know who killed him because that's the case. They find a body over there and you don't know who killed him. Question is, what do you mean? Idiyadiyah man kasle. If you know who killed him, bach tolo, then the person has to be executed. What do you mean? You need a kapara for the sigur. The answer is amazed, but like Asrubay, you could have, for example, he did amazed, but there was no Asura, so you can't kill him, because he learned the Sanhedrin. So, okay, that's only if he does it multiple times. But, so in order to be Mechaper on the Sibur, so you need the Ksun. He himself will have Negoyim come on him, actually. So you were mentioning before about Shvith Zomim being punishable with Saras. So yeah, Rashi mentions over here that indeed, the Gemara in Erechin mentions that. Yeah. Okay. So that's the answer as far as shvichos damim. So again, if he did it b'mezid, then he executed him, and if he did it b'mezid and there was Aiden Basra, then he executed him. That's that. If it was b'mezid, but there wasn't Aiden Basra, then he himself gets tada. Right. We're talking about within b'mezid itself. We're talking about all b'mezid. If he did it b'mezid, so it depends. If it was Aiden Basra, you execute him. No Aiden Basra, you can't execute him. But you know Aiden Basra, but we know who it was. The Sibur has the Ksonus as the Kapara, and he himself gets Sarah. If it's not known who did it, then that's when the nearest city has to bring an egg out of her. And the Pashas, he also will get Sarah in that case, because Hashem knows. Okay. Lashon Hara Nami like Pasha. As far as Lashon Hara, there's also no contradiction between that. He said that you need the Me'il versus Rabbi Shurban Levi is saying you need the Turis. Habit Sina, Habit Pahestia. It depends. Was the Lashon Hara done in privacy, then the Ksurdus is Machapah. Right, okay. So when it's in privacy, then the Ksurdus is Machapah. When it's before Hestia, when somebody does go on Twitter or what have you, and then says the Lashon Hara publicly in front of everybody, so then the noise of the palmonium of the bells from the Me'il is Machapah for that. Again, Machapah, as Kosta says, on a collective level, not necessarily for the individual level, etc. Hadron Alachon is Be'ach Machapah. Now we're going to talk about a topic. This parak is going to talk about. So up until now, we've been talking about all the different kinds of korbanos. But now we have to figure out. It's not a long parak. It only runs for three blocks. But we have to figure out if you have a bunch of different korbanos that have to be brought. What's the order of precedence? Which korban comes ahead of which? And this isn't just relevant as far as korbanos. This comes up. This has relevance in a number of areas of halacha. The question in davening, for example, in a number of areas of mitzvahs, which thing do you do before the other one? It comes up even when we even just when we make kiddush. Why is this? What's one reason why when we make kiddush we make the bracha on wine before we make the bracha on kedusha tayyim? So one reason, but still all says it because tadir v'shein is tadir, because the bracha on wine is more common. You say it more often than the bracha on kiddush. The Mishnah starts off. Kol ha-tadir mechaveret kodim mechaveret. Any kind of korban that happens more frequently than another korban comes first. So, for example, Shabbos before a Chodesh, let's say. Hatmidin kodim l'mustafin. The korban tamid comes before the korban mustaf.
So, the tar of young people comes before the korban tamid?
No. The power of Yom Kippur is made less common than the Talmud. The Talmud is taken. The Talmud comes first. The Talmud is brought every day. The same Talmud is brought every day. Is brought twice a day. So on Yom Kippur you bring the Talmud, and later first the Talmud, the Talmud for the Chag. Later on you bring the Purim and the Seirim and the Mustaf and so forth. Musfei Shabbos Toivim in the Musfei Shchodesh. When Shabbos and the Shchodesh, when the Shabbos comes out on the Shchodesh, the Musaf of Shabbos is brought before the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. Musfei Shchodesh Toivim in the Musfei Rosh Hashanah, and Rosh Hashanah is always Rosh Chodesh. The Rosh Hashanah is always Rosh Chodesh by definition. So the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh is brought before the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Milabad Olos Haboker Asher Lo Olos Hachamid Tasu Atela. As the pasuk says, right at the top it, besides for the Ola of the morning, which is the Ola of the Tamid, you should do these Karbanos. So we see, besides doesn't just mean that if you bring those, it also means that those come first, before the Mustafa.
Technically, we should have three Kulas then, when Mustafa falls on Ola,
we don't have three Kulas. We combine them. We have one Mustafa, which includes the Karbanos of Shabbos and the Karbanos of... You don't daven separate Mustafa for each one. There's an avoda called the korban musaf, and I mean every korban musaf consisted of multiple animals. In this case, you're talking about there are different musaf, but still all it means is there's more animals to bring, but still all basically one avoda. When it comes to the musaf of Yom Kippur, the Gemara mentions in Yom they're divided up. Yes, some of them are brought earlier in the day and some of them later in the day, but nevertheless, musaf is musaf. You don't divide them up like that. Okay. Okay. Like Mar Sota, Menolon. Where do we know this concept of that Kol HaTavir comes first? What do you mean Menolon? Kidikom or Taimer? We just said the reason. Milavad Ola Saboka. We quoted the pasuk because the pasuk is saying that it comes beside me after the Ola of the morning. Okay, so the Gemara answers you right. The question is though as follows. Fine. Granted, based on that pasuk, you can say that the Tamid comes before the Musaf, because fine, the Tamid is indeed more Tadir because it happens twice a day and the Musaf only happens on Shabbos or Rosh Chodesh or what have you. The question is, within Musafim themselves, how do we know that, for example, the Pasuk Milavad Olas HaBoker teaches us fine that the Olas HaBoker comes first.
Right.
We don't have an explicit Pasuk that says that one Musaf comes before the other. So how do you know that the Musaf of Shabbos, for example, comes before the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh? You don't have that explicitly from the Pasuk. So that's
right.
The Pasuk. Fine, but where do we know that concept from? Not necessarily when it comes to Karbanos, first of all, but besides that also, the fact is, the Pasuk mentioned Ola HaBoker, that means the Ola of the morning. Where do we get from that it means the same way the Ola of Shabbos, let's say, should come before the Ola of Rosh Chodesh? Especially because in the next Mishnah, we're going to say that Chatas comes before Ola. So in that case, let's consider, for example, the Musaf of Shabbos consists of two sheep for an Ola. The Musaf of Rosh Chodesh consists of, two parim, one aisle, and seven kvasim for an Ola, and a sorer for a chatas.
For what?
For Rosh Chodesh. There's two, one, and seven, and then one sorer for a chatas. So if you're going to have a chatas coming before an Ola, maybe the chatas of Rosh Chodesh should be coming before the Ola of the Shabbos. How do you know, and our Mishnah is telling us that not, that everything of Shabbos comes ahead. So how do we know that? So that's the question Minolan. Amar Rabbi Ila, the Amar Kwa. So Rabbi Ila says, because you have like this. The Pasuk says, in connection with the Korbanos of Pesach, it says, Ka'ela Tassela Yem Shivas Yomim. And the Pasuk says, like these, you should do the Korbanos each day of Pesach. In other words, the you have like this. The Pasuk says that you bring the Mustafim of Pesach. You bring, again, two Purim, one aisle, seven Kvasim. Then it says, Milavad Olas
HaBoker.
It's always listed in the Pasuk in the order, Parim, Elam, and Kvasim, and then the Sarah, yeah. Okay. So anyway, so the point is that, so the Pasuk, the can go like this then. So you have, it says, you bring the Korbanos, Parim, B'nei Bakr, Shnai, Ba'ilach, Shiva Kvasim, Neshana, Omen Chasim, Shloisha, Esterin, Lamapar, etc. Milavad Olas HaBoker, then the Pasuk says, besides for the Ola that's brought in the morning, meaning that comes first. And then the next Pasuk continues, Ko'ela, as you always hear whenever they learn it during Kalamoy Sukkot, you always have the whole sivra always joins in, Ko'ela. So Ko'ela, like these, you should do each day, implying, in other words, Ela Ko'ela, meaning, in other words, these have to be like those. In other words, just like we said before, with the Korbanos of the first day Pesach, for example, that the Tamid, being Tadir, comes first, so also within the Mustafa themselves. For Ela, they have to be light beings in the sense that whatever is told you is going to come ahead of them.
So without
Ela, we wouldn't know.
We wouldn't know
among the Mustafa themselves.
We could not imply that from just the principle. That's
the point. We wouldn't know that if it weren't for the word Ela, right? We wouldn't know because we would argue the Talmud is different. It comes every single day.
And the Chabas of why is not more people in the Chabas of another?
What do you mean? There's Karbanas of Shabbat there every week, the ones of Pesach only on Pesach. But the point is,
exactly.
Fine, but we still wouldn't know. You would say, that's fine. Maybe when it comes to the Talmud, because it comes every single day, then therefore it comes ahead of everything else.
Right.
You wouldn't necessarily know from that, but something that comes once a week comes ahead of something that comes once a month.
Why not?
You wouldn't know, because you wouldn't know. You would say it's not as strong. It only comes once a week. Because the fact is, it doesn't come more often, but it's still not the same thing. It still doesn't come every single day. You could
why?
Because it's
comes once a day, it's tummy, and it comes once a week rather than once a month, it's not tummy. Why?
Because what we're saying is, maybe the Pasuk is telling us something that comes every single day comes
but
ahead of something.
Only once
every single day, right.
Okay.
And because we have the word Kaela, then we extend that rule to other things that are tummy.
Without that, you would say only things that come once a day, right.
Mind you, Tosfos has a long discussion over here about all the pros and cons of this, because b'chlal, we have another limud for the concept that the Talmud comes before everything else. Ha'ola, meaning Ola Rishona. So why do we need another pasuk to tell us that the Talmud comes first? So Tosfos mentions over here that you could argue, as in fact Tosfos does in Stoffing, where you also have a sugya about this, you could argue that maybe we need...
There's
one in the morning, one in the afternoon, right.
So
that's not the point. The point is, if we already have a process saying that the Talmud has to come before any other carbon, then what do we need? What do we need the Talmud business? So that's the thing. The choice that starts by mentioning that maybe we need one pasuk to tell us that Nedarim and Nedarbet can't be brought before the Talmud, and another one to tell us that Mustafin can't be brought before the Talmud. So in Stochim, Tosfos uses that answer. Here, Tosfos doesn't like that answer. So Tosfos gives other answers over here that we have. We need one pasuk to tell us that it should be shechted first, and another one to say that its blood should be sprinkled first. What about the mincha, the kohen gadol, that the kohen gadol brings every day? That's also every day. It's equally as tadir as the talmid. So maybe you should argue that it should come first. That's why you need the other pasuk, ha'ola, ola rishayna, to tell us that no, the talmid still goes even before that. Ha'ola, ola rishayna, but that tells us specifically that the closest last answer means that it has to come even before the minchas chavitin. And then our pasuk over here, milavad ola sapoker, also tells us that it comes before any other korbanos as well. And then ko'ela teaches us that it also applies in general to the whole concept, that teaches us the whole concept of talmid. Okay, so the question is, Gemara asks, behind me, Boilo the Gufe. What do you mean? You need the word Ka'ela to teach you that you should bring Korbanos on the second and third and fourth and whatever day of Pesach, exactly like on the first. You don't have it available for Jerusha. The answer is, but in that case, the Pesach didn't have to say Ka'ela. The answer is, it could have said Ela Tasuvayam. And it would mean this, meaning the same list of Korbanos as in the previous Pesach. So when it says Ka'ela, then we have it for Jerusha. Okay, problem is, because of Ela Tasulayim Shiva Fayamim. Fine, but if it said Ela without saying the word Ka'ela, then you would think what it means is Tabamina Ela Lashiva Fayamim, Ela Lashiva Fayamim. Maybe what it means is you divide up the Karbanas that are mentioned in the first pasuk, you divide them up among the 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe therefore it has to say Ka'ela to teach us that just like you bring, for example, 7 kvasim on the first day, so also you bring 7 kvasim on the second day and so forth, rather than dividing them up among the days. If you said Ela, then you would think it meant these that we said in the previous sukkim are meant to be Shiva Yom, and they're meant to be divided up among the 7 days of Pesach.
Ka'ela
means that no, it means 7 on the first day, 7 on the second day, yeah.
So it's usually.
That's the question. The answer is layoim, Steve. Okay, but the pasuk also says layoim, meaning for each day. So from that alone, you understand it means the same list of korbanos each day. So therefore, again, you could have said ka'ela. It could have said ela, and since it says ka'ela, then we have the drush. Okay, the problem is, v'akasi ema ela layoim avashal yom lo yadayin apama. Okay, but still, maybe if it didn't say the word ela, then you would think what it means is, you have to bring this list of korbanos, 2 parim, 1 aisle, and 7 kvasim on the first day. Then it would say, Ba'akapi. Ema Eila Layoim, you would think. If it only said Eila, then you would think like this. What it means is Eila Layoim. It means these, the 2, 1, and 7, are for the first day. But then when it says, I will shao yoim loya dina kama. But then it continues, you have to bring korbanos for 7 days, and it doesn't, and you wouldn't know how many. So therefore, maybe that's, so that's why we need the word ko'ela. So we don't have ko'ela available for a drosha of other Rishani Prasad. The answer is, ko'ela means exactly like me. I mean, right, that's the point. However, the Gemara says no, because that wouldn't have been a problem, because omakro tasu, because the pasuk finishes off that you should do, ko'ela tasu la yoim shibas yomim.
Tasu would be enough for the same amount.
Meaning, chiyu kol asiyas shavas. It means that all the doings of korbanos, each of the 7 days of the Pesach, is exactly the same. So therefore, once we have that, we wouldn't need the word ko'ela to teach us that it's exactly the same. Therefore, now we have ko'ela available for a drush. Abaya says, I don't even need that answer. Migufa dekra. I can actually, I don't even need this whole thing about learning from layoim and from tasu and whatever. You can see it from the wording of the, from the word milabad olaf aboter itself. You can see without even using the word ka'ela. Fine, you want to argue that you want to argue that the word ka'ela is meant to clarify how many korbanos there were supposed to be each of the 7 days of Pesach. Fine, but I don't even need the word ka'ela to teach us about Chodri Rishen Osadri. I can learn it from the actual words milabad olaf aboter. Because in Kain Lemakra, because if it only meant that the Tomid comes before anything else, but other than that, there's no Tadir Rishayin Tadir within the Mustafim themselves, if that's what it meant, Lemakra Milavad Ola Taboker, then it would just say, aside from the Ola of the morning, the Pishrei can stop there. Asher La Ola Tatomid Lomali, why does it add that this Korban of the morning is a Korban Tomid? We already know it's a Korban Tomid. Lamema, Dehasu Tadir Tikrin. That those extra words, asher lo olas ha-tomid, come to teach us that whatever is more tomid, whatever is more constant, more tadir, than something else, comes first. So therefore, that's where we learn from that itself. We learn that what that Musaf of Shabbos comes before the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh, and Rosh Chodesh before Rosh Hashanah, etc. We don't even need the word ka'ela, Abaya is saying. You can see it from the words asher lo olas ha-tomid. Asher lo'olas ha-tomid teaches us why, when we say that the tomid comes first, it's not just because it's olas ha-boker, it's because it's olas ha-tomid, it's because an olas that becomes tomid, because it comes more often. No, once we have the concept. Yeah, because since it says asher lo'olas ha-tomid, and besides, most mustafim are olas. You have a chatas brought with most mustafim except the Shabbos, but the primary thing of it is olas.
Okay. Once it's derived
from Asher Lo'olas HaTomid, then we understand the concept of Tadir. Because Tomid and Tadir basically mean the same thing. Tomid is Tanakh Loshen, and Tadir is Gemara Loshen. But they both mean constant. They both mean ongoing. So yeah.
What do they do? That's Abaye.
So that's Abaye saying they fought an enigma with Ka'ela. No, Rava doesn't say. But the sort of Ela has said you learn it from Ka'ela. We argued that maybe you need the word Ka'ela because otherwise you wouldn't know how many korbanos you're supposed to bring each of the other days of Pesach. So we did answer that because we said you could learn from Tasu. But Abaye says never mind all that. Even if you're going to argue that you wouldn't know without the word Ka'ela how many korbanos you bring each day of Pesach, you could still derive it just from Asher Lo'olas HaTomid.